This is an iHeart podcast.
Hey, Jesse Kelly listeners, Clay Travis here. Buck Sexton and I dropping in the podcast feed this week.
That's right. Like two radio paratroopers swooping in to join our friend in his foxhole fighting for America. Find our episode on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The war going on inside of America, most people aren't talking about. We will talk about that tonight. Congressman Chip Roy is here. Carol Roth testified in front of Congress. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. There is a nasty, nasty religious war going on in this country. Religious tension. It's really, really ugly out there. Have you heard about it? No, I'm not talking about anti-Semitism on college campuses. No, I'm not talking about that at all. And let me clarify why I'm not talking about that at all. It's not that it's a good thing that Jewish students on Columbia's campus, on UCLA, are being shouted at by other students and faculty and kill all the Jews. That's not a good thing. But it's also not at all a shocking thing that evil things are taking place on evil college campuses. If I'm in Afghanistan and I get assaulted, it's bad, but it's not shocking because I'm in Afghanistan. There are huge stories happening in this country right now, gigantic things happening that don't involve Columbia. And so let's focus on one of the major things happening out there right now, the systemic war on Christianity. It's here. It's become government policy. Now let's clarify why before we go into everything else. Why has it become government policy? It's not that the government hates Christians more than it hates Jews. It's that the government doesn't share. It doesn't share loyalty, the loyalties of the people. Because America has traditionally been a more Christian nation, founded by Christians, the majority have been Christians traditionally. That has been the one that has been the focus of America's communists, America's government, and the war is everywhere. And it's really, really bad. And it's gotten to the point where we have complete infiltration of the church by the filthy commies. You see what happened with the United Methodists? I know it's the Methodists, but did you see what happened? They just lifted a 4-decade ban on LGBTQ clergy. A 4-decade ban. If you want to know one of the main reasons why American Christianity, the American church, has not fought back as hard against the dirty, godless, demonic commies as they should have, it's because the American church got infiltrated years ago with all this cultural Marxist filth everywhere. Oh, we need more women in here. Do we have enough gay people in there? Now it's everywhere. Now you have sermons about a non-binary God.
I invite you to rise in body or spirit and let us confess our faith today in the words of the Sparkle Creed. I believe in the non-binary God, whose pronouns are plural. I believe in Jesus Christ, their child, who wore a fabulous tunic and had two dads and saw everyone as a sibling child of God. I believe in the rainbow spirit who shatters our image of one white light and refracts it into a rainbow of gorgeous diversity.
And there's my frustration. It's not just with the church. My frustration is all the opposing sides, the sides that should be standing firm, standing tall, against the demons as they tear through everything we see. The sides that should be standing tall instead, in so many cases, in most cases, have been co-opted, infiltrated, destroyed by the evil demons on the left. So now they can't stand tall at all. We don't stand tall on anything. What does the right stand firm on? Besides campus anti-Semitism, of course. Is there anything the right firmly stands on? Anything? You can't get the Republican Party to be unified on life anymore. Wrap your mind around that. Wrap your mind around that. The Republican Party for the entirety of my life has pretended to be the pro-life party. Because, you know, massacring a baby in its mother's womb is awful, like the worst thing you could ever do. And the Republicans have acknowledged that, at least publicly, for the entirety of my life. This is wrong. We should protect life, protect the mother, protect the baby, protect life, protect life. That has been the stance of the Republican Party, at least publicly, for the entirety of my life. But no, not anymore. Not in the year 2024. In the year 2024, the Republican Party, they picked up some polls and they looked at some poll numbers and they said, oh my gosh, women in this country, they love abortion. They really love it. What if this costs us an election? Hey guys, let's get more abortions out here. We have a Republican controlled legislature in the state of Arizona. I want to make sure I reemphasize that. The governor is a Democrat. There's no question about it. But the legislature is Republican controlled. This was a demonstration that was just allowed to happen at Arizona's Capitol.
That's one of the things when the whole topic of kids being trans come up. Don't listen. Listen to your kids. And adults change pronouns all the time. Adults, as we grow and as we mature and as we figure it out, we may go from identifying as, you know, within the binary, and then we decide, you know what, that doesn't fit me. I think I'm agender. I don't really identify as a gender. So please use they, them pronouns.
Drag queen story hour. Planned Parenthood drag queen story hour at the Republican Capitol. Oh, and I didn't even mention, speaking of the abortion issue, they're now going to repeal the pro-life law. They had a pro-life law in the books. Arizona Supreme Court upheld the law. The law was a ban on the practice of abortion. But because we checked the poll numbers, the Republican-controlled legislature vetoing it. Heading to Katie Hobbs's desk. We know what she'll do with it. A bipartisan majority. Two Republicans voted for it, Shauna Bullock and Thomas Shope, in case you're wondering. They both have primaries in July, if you'd like to do something about that. And look, I know, this is the point. This is the point where desperate people on the right, maybe you're saying this yourself right now, is Jesse, we gotta win, elections are always lost, Jesse, oh my gosh. Look, we have to win elections? If I don't have any of my values reflected in the GOP, then why would I care if the GOP wins elections? I mean, look, I feel the same desperation you feel. I look at Joe Biden, I look what the communists are doing, and I want everything to stop, and I want the madness to stop, and to stop the destruction of my country. So we have to stop them, right? We need to stop them. But if I need to stop them, and I need to replace them, well, I need to replace them with something that reflects my values at all, or else don't replace them, just leave them there. What exactly does the Republican Party stand for? What do they stand for? What do they stand firm on? You know, let me ask you something. I was actually talking to one of my producers about this before the show, but let me ask you something. For the last week or two, how many Republicans, senators, House, everybody, how many national Republicans have you seen go on television and yell about what's happening on college campuses? The anti-Semitism and the violence and the protests and what's... How many Republicans have you seen in the last week or two? All of them? It's pretty much all of them. It's most of them. Public statements, bills, things like that. Okay, all right, so you got that. You remember all the speeches. They're all doing it. It's the big thing now. Now, let me ask you something. Knowing that the FBI has already infiltrated the Christian church, knowing that the Department of Justice has been kicking in the doors of pastors and pro-lifers, knowing all the things you know about what's happening to America's Christians, when's the last GOPer you saw step up to the podium and talk about the war being waged on America's Christians by America's government? When's the last time you saw it? Oh, I know we're really, really, really concerned right now with what's going on at Ivy League campuses, because those are really that's where our freedom grows, isn't it? That's where our allies can be found. So I know we're really worried about NYU, and I certainly don't want to stop anybody from fixing things at NYU. But when's the last GOP speech you saw about protecting the church from the government? Have you even seen one? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. That bill that passed last night in the House was detestable. Passed, almost everyone voted for it. It's like 300 and some to 90 some. Chip Roy, of course, didn't vote for it. He's one of the few good people in Congress. Chip Roy is going to join us next and talk about why he didn't. What's in this thing? How horrible is it? Before we get to Chip, let's talk about something else that's horrible, and that's foot pain. Having your feet hurt at the end of the day, it's awful. And if you live long enough, you start to just get used to it. It's kind of baked into the cake. Oh, man, I can't wait to get home, get my shoes off. My dogs are barking. Have you tried Cheetify yet? Gravity Defier? One pair of these shoes, I don't know that you'll keep any of the rest of your shoes, because each pair comes with custom orthotics. And it has this technology in there. So the pressure points on your foot that are impacting the ground, unique cushion there. Try Cheetify, and they'll be the only shoes you ever buy from now on. I'm telling you, these things are amazing. And they're shoes made for you, specifically for you, because of the custom orthotics made for your foot. Go to GDEFY.com. Promo code Jesse will save you a bunch of money. Go and go now. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Well, let's talk to Chip about this disastrous bill that I'm sure will be used against you, me, and everyone else, but everyone can pretend like it's fighting anti-Semitism today. Joining me now, Congressman Chip Roy from the great state of Texas. Chip, you're one of the few, once again, who voted against this pile of crap. Why'd you vote against it, Chip? Do you hate Jews?
Jesse, look, this is the thing, and let's back up for a minute. We ended up in this stupid political cul-de-sac because Republican so-called leadership chose to. That's what happened, right? Back up and rewind the clock 10 days ago. I had to vote against a massive foreign aid funding bill because, as you know, and as your listeners and viewers know, it was funding Ukraine for a missionless war when we don't have our own border secure. It was funding Israel, which I generally support doing and has supported doing in the past, but it was unpaid for, but importantly had $9 billion for Hamas and refugees. We'll come back to that in a minute. But I had to vote against that. So I had to spend the last week going and explaining to my dear friends, my Jewish constituents, a lot of my Christian constituents who are very pro-Israel, why did I vote against Israel? Because the geniuses of the Republican leadership put us in that position by putting a bad bill forward. So fast forward, they did it again. They put a bill on the floor that didn't go through Judiciary Committee, didn't get a chance to amend it, didn't have a hearing. Then in so doing, labeling an anti-Semitism bill, they got everybody spun up that this was really important to go win the arguments in this craziness on the college campuses. And then they jammed it through, and it had a reference to an international organization's definition of anti-Semitism, which then included an entire laundry list of examples, which are another way of saying thought police. And yes, I know the Trump administration adopted it in some State Department thing, and some states have adopted it, but that doesn't mean I should adopt it. It doesn't mean I should codify it as a member of Congress. And frankly, we should review it. We shouldn't do thought police crap. Why do we play the games of the Democrat? Go kick them in the junk, kick their butts, and take our country back, instead of playing their game.
What, can you explain, because obviously I'm dead set against it, but there is all kinds of information and misinformation, people love that word today, out there about it. You're the one in Congress. You voted no. What's in it? What does it actually do? What do we have here?
Okay. The bill's purpose is to define anti-Semitism, to attach to as a rule of construction, so that when the Department of Education, the bureaucrats at the Department of Education, are going out to apply the Civil Rights Act, Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, to apply it to the funds that go to universities to make sure they're not discriminating, which of course in the past historically is generally designed since 1964 to apply to race. Obviously there are other groups that it applies to, but you start raising very serious constitutional questions on both free speech, but also expression of religion and your religious views. Those things are getting targeted because you've got this laundry list of examples that go into historical context, things that you say, things you might do. And it's a whole list of things you can do or think and say that will get you in trouble as being anti-Semitic. Now, look, I looked at the list. If you looked at the list, you would agree most of that stuff is horrific, stupid crap to say. But when you start getting into empowering the federal government, bureaucrats, to go come in and say that because you said these things or thought these things, that somehow then your actions, which might be horrific actions, that somehow is something they get to determine is driven by anti-Semitism, that to me is where you're getting afoul of things. We should do what Ben Sasse did in the University of Florida, what Jay Hartzell, the president of the University of Texas, did, which said, knock this crap off. You're not going to have encampments. You're not going to block people's access to schools. If you violate our rules, you're going to be kicked out of the university. You won't be able to graduate. And knock it all off. You can go give your free speech crap and say your weird pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel crap over there and say it all you want. But you're not going to jam everything up and you're not going to hurt anybody. You're not going to attack anybody. That's what you do. You don't need the federal government coming in and dropping a stupid bill that's going to then create thought crimes, hate crimes, and create thought police for the entire country.
What does this empower the federal government to do when it obviously passes? Everyone and their brother knows this thing's sailing right through. Are we talking about the FBI showing up at my door if I wake up tomorrow morning and decide I hate Jews all of a sudden and I start spouting out a bunch of stupid stuff? Do I have to worry about the Federal Bureau of Investigation coming to visit me? What does it do?
So let me start with what I would say is the good news. Like, to the extent that you think this is not that big of a deal, and some of my colleagues are arguing that, including the Speaker of the House and some of my colleagues in the Senate who are looking at it now, they would say that this is narrowly focused on just the Department of Education, Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. So all they can do is apply this and this definition of anti-Semitism to the activities and the organizations on campuses and students on campuses, that if they do any of the things that are problematic, that would be viewed as targeting our Jewish friends and doing it in a certain way, that this list of examples, they would say that it's anti-Semitic, that could all be factored in to what the remedies are through the Civil Rights Act to go after university dollars and the organizations and groups on campus. But everything flows from that. Once we, Congress, accept the premise that we're going to put the government into thinking thoughts, views that are backing up whatever your illegal actions are, now, again, do you trust any bureaucrat at the Department of Education for them to maybe work with law enforcement community if they need to go carry out the Civil Rights Act to then expand it to this laundry list of examples? Again, say what you and I promise, I'm going to speak for you, horrified at what some people are saying and doing about our friends in Israel siding with the Palestinians. It's nonsense. But frankly, this tiny little group of radicals, you don't go remake your constitutional order to address this tiny little group of radicals. You take this tiny little group of radicals, you kick them in the ass, you get them off your campus, other than if they follow the rules to get, engage in their crazy rhetoric. But what you don't do is have the thought police come in and tell you that what you say can make you then suddenly be whatever the government deems is wrong. Once you've done that, you've given power to the people you should never give power to.
Chip, these animals that take to the streets every couple years, whether it's Antifa or Black Lives Matter, now they're all pretending to be Hamas lovers or whatever, it's all the same group of dirty commie dorks as you well know, you and I have talked about this, they're funded, they're organized, they're paid to do what they do, which is cause civil unrest in our country. So why can't we have a GOP that attacks the source of that? Who's financing it? Who's organizing it? I don't care if some English major on the quad gets pepper sprayed. In fact, I think it's hilarious, Chip, but that's not the actual source of our issues. We have people, including international people in international, well, other countries like China, funding and organizing this crap. Does anyone in the GOP want to go after that?
No, it's worse than that, Jesse. Many in the GOP want to actually help fund it by giving more money to the United Nations.
Of course.
Or by giving money, for example, last week to go to Hamas and to fund the refugees and the Palestinians to come over to our country. The Republican leadership is so ass backwards, you can't possibly put it into words. They're generally speaking too stupid to breathe, much less vote, much less lead the Republican Party. So here's the deal. We have to change that. We have to change that. We started to last year. We made some serious changes. We actually forced some constraint on spending and caps. We passed the non-amnesty actual border security bill. We actually passed the national defense bill that undid a lot of the woke crap. We were cooking with peanut oil, and we got a little off track for a variety of reasons. Now they've reverted to the mean, right, which is stupid. They want to put bills on the floor for political purposes so they can go win. They need to get power so they can do all the good things that they never do when they have power. So there's a large block of us that are saying, hell no, we're done. We're going to keep proving the emperor has no clothes. We're going to lay it bare. We're going to vote against their crap. We're going to expose it to the people, and we're winning. It's just maybe not fast enough yet. I said it to our friend Glenn Beck earlier this morning. You know, you're sitting on the Titanic, the iceberg's in front of us. We're turning the wheel. It ain't turning fast enough because we got people on our own team pulling the wheel in the other direction. So we've got to get in with enough force to yank that wheel over so we can save the country.
All right, what do we make of this speaker dust-up that's coming? Obviously, Marjorie Taylor Greene's going to kick Mike Johnson out, do a motion to vacate or something. So you can take that or leave that. Thomas Massie getting involved, though, interested me because I'm a fan of Thomas Massie. He comes on this show, solid human being. I know you and him are friends. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't really care, Chip. I know that's terrible, but my favorite 3 weeks of Congress really in my entire adult life are when we didn't have a speaker and you people couldn't meet to take away more of our freedoms. So why would I care? I mean, I don't care one way or the other, but what are your thoughts on all this?
I mean, look, so Jesse, I start from that perspective, right? Everybody says, oh, the sky's going to fall. You don't have a speaker. What will you do? I don't know. Stop screwing up the country. Stop making it worse. Stop spending money we don't have. Stop empowering freaking, you know, a new FISA bill. Stop giving money overseas. Like, how much worse can it get? You remember that scene in Christmas Vacation when Chevy Chase's character says, worse? How can it get any worse? I mean, look, the fact is we know it can get worse. I'm joking. But the fact is the MTV, the motion to vacate, from my standpoint, I wouldn't have used it last fall. I was very public. I thought, Kevin, while not perfect, we were moving the needle in the right direction. Okay, we had the fight. We picked a guy that on paper was, you know, more conservative. And unfortunately, for 6 months, it's been a complete failure. So is are Marjorie and Thomas right to pull the ripcord and force a vote? I don't know. It's in their rights to do so. It's been in the rules of Congress for 200 and something years. I was not wanting to go down this road, but how in the hell am I going to vote to table a vote like this when the speaker did what he did yesterday? Like, literally put on the bill, on the floor, a bill that forces us to have to walk the plank, vote against a bill titled anti-Semitism because it has a whole bunch of crap in there that undermines free speech and our freedom. So, look, I think we need to have a whole new fresh start in the GOP next January. We need to beg the American people to vote for us because the other side is so bad. We need to beg that they will give us power, and then we need to actually form a structure that will allow us to deliver. That means wholesale changes. We're working on some of that right now. Whether they should call the vote up next week or not, that's up to them. I have respect for Thomas and Marjorie. They're both good friends. Obviously, Thomas is one of my closest friends up here. If they pull the ripcord, you know, look, I'll have to vote my conscience. And I think Democrats are going to save the speaker either way. So I think it's going to be a little bit of palace intrigue. But I do think we got to get busy picking an entire new leadership slate for next January. We need to start from scratch. I don't care who's been the committee chairs. Yeah. I don't care who's raised all the money. Screw all that. We need fighters. We need to take this country back, and Republicans have got to actually try to lead the effort.
Yeah. Fingers crossed on that. Congressman, as always, thank you, sir. I appreciate you very much. All right. Carol Roth is going to join us. We have many things we have to discuss with her before Carol joins us. You know she's going to talk about money. She always ends up talking about money. So let me talk to you about money. Blackout coffee is money. And speaking of money, you know you save 20% when you order Blackout Coffee when you go to blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse, right? Blackout Coffee is the patriotic coffee company. All these big coffee companies, America sucks this and DEI that, not Blackout Coffee. They share our values. They promote, actually, our values. And they have the greatest coffee ever. You like just straight up black coffee like I do? That's what I get. If you like the foo-foo stuff, the more flavored stuff, they have the cinnamon roll coffee. Oh, my gosh. Either way, blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse saves you 20% off your first order. So go order a pile of it, all right? We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Good morning. I'm Carol Roth, a small business expert and a small business owner myself. On behalf of small businesses across the United States, I'm asking that you, our bipartisan advocates for small business, immediately overturn the Corporate Transparency Act's beneficial ownership information rule passed by Congress, which unfairly targets American small businesses. The Constitution of the United States protects the natural rights of all Americans, including against federal government overreach. While preventing financial crimes is a worthwhile endeavor, your methods cannot do so in a way that infringes upon Americans' natural rights or assumes that they are guilty without due process. Asking small businesses and their owners to report sensitive personal information and identification to an organization involved in monitoring financial crimes unfortunately does just that. It's not only an invasion of privacy, but it also creates additional burdens and challenges for small business owners.
Look at Carol. I can't believe how big she's gotten. I mean, big time. Anyway, joining me now, Carol Roth. She's the author of the book, You Will Own Nothing. Now she's testifying in front of Congress. Carol Roth, household name. Okay, Carol, before we get into this transparency, whatever, the technical stuff, I want to talk about testifying in front of Congress. Is there like a green room or something? What was it? Was it cool?
Obviously, first, I appreciate that the House Committee on Small Business wanted to hear my thoughts as an expert and to stand up for small businesses on during National Small Business Week. The room that the Small Business Committee has is not quite as decked out and impressive as some of the other committees. Surprise, surprise, right? If you're associated with small businesses, yeah. You even get the shaft in Congress. It was a very interesting situation, just the way that they went about things, the kinds of questions they asked, and seeing who defended what. So it was very eye-opening in terms of what it is that we're up against. But the nice thing was that there were many people on that committee who are fierce supporters of small businesses. And the bad part is there were some people who I think forgot that they were on the committee for small business, but we did our best.
Yeah, we call those people Democrats. All right, let's focus on this transparency, whatever thing. What is this thing and why are you yelling at them about it?
So, I took with me almost 450 statements, Jesse, from small businesses and small business supporters across the country to basically stand up to this. This is a rule that's come out of a division of the Treasury called the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN. And FinCEN is trying to combat money laundering, and cartel activity. And the way they want to do that, Jesse, is they want small businesses that have LLCs and S-corps to put all sorts of important personal sensitive information into a database for anybody who is not only an owner in a business, a small business, but a quote unquote important decision maker. And this includes your name, your address, an identifying number from a document like a driver's license or a passport, a photo of that, which I'm sure you know, none of this will go awry and get hacked or be used in the wrong way. But just think about the point of this. So they think that those who are involved in cartels and money laundering activities are going to self-report to the financial crimes database. We all know that's not going to happen. But if you're a small business and you don't, the penalties are insane. At this point, they're up to, because they're adjusted for inflation, of course, they're up to $591 a day that you don't comply on the civil side. On the criminal side, a $10,000 fine and jail time for not complying. So this should have been the easiest discussion. Everybody should have been on the same page here that this is absolutely insane. But of course, there were some people who thought this was really important. This is going to fix all of the financial crimes. And by the way, big businesses are exempt. Of course.
Well, speaking of big businesses, changing gears here, McDonald's is now sounding the alarm about what's happening out there. Big businesses are warning about this environment. What's so scary that even the big boys are complaining?
So we saw this with the first print of Q1 GDP, that the economy is slowed. That was almost a full percentage point below expectations. And we know, as we've discussed before, that the quote unquote growth in the economy has been window dressed by government spending. At the same time that the government is going into debt, consumers have been going into debt. They're dipping into their savings. And at some point that runway was going to run out. And so now we're seeing the signs, you know, particularly with those companies that before traded on being a good value and targeted lower and middle class consumers. You know, they didn't have the premium product like Chipotle, who's still doing well, or the super value product like Domino's that's still doing well. But the McDonald's and the Starbucks, where it really is either getting super expensive to go to McDonald's, or that you just can't afford to treat yourself to a, you know, $10 fancy drink or whatever it is, they're starting to see that show up in their numbers. And that is being reinforced by some of the other data that we're seeing. Something like the personal saving rate has been down every month this quarter. This last quarter is down to 3.2%. The historic average for personal savings is about 8.5%. So again, consumers are dipping in, dipping into their savings, they're racking up debt, trying to hang on. And the worst part about this, you know, and then that part is bad enough, is the gaslighting. The fact that the Biden administration and their mouthpieces will come out with charts and snooty pictures and be like, the economy is doing great. It's growing. I don't know what you're talking about. You're just not fancy economists. Well, guess what? People can't afford to go to McDonald's. That says a lot to me.
That's savings number. Carol, every time you get on here and you talk about personal savings, that's the one that gets me, because I've been there and I know what that means. I know what that means. Golly. Carol Roth, you are the best. I'm sorry we are out of time. I will talk to you again shortly, I am sure. Jeez. That savings number, man. That and the credit card number. The credit card debt going up. The savings accounts going down, man. There is a Anyway, let's talk about something else. We've got to talk about the border. Who is facilitating this invasion at the border? Is it the cartels? It's actually not. It's worse than that. I'm going to talk to Josh Phillip about this next. He did some reporting on this. Before we talk to Josh, let me talk to you about protecting yourself, because the border's open. Because our homegrown criminals, they also get off scot-free here now. So what do we do? Well, I'll tell you what everyone in my life does. Every single member of my family, we have a Byrna pistol launcher. My parents, my sister, cousins, we have Byrna pistol launchers. Many of us, like me, carry concealed. I carry concealed, but I want a non-lethal option. Many don't even like guns. I'm not a gun guy. Okay, fine. Burn a pistol launchers are non-lethal. They shoot pepper balls or tear gas balls. But they will stop a very, very bad man from hurting you. They're legal in all 50 states. You don't need a permit. You don't need a background check. If you meet an evil man in the parking lot tonight who wants to harm you, are you sure you can stop him? I am. Are you? BYRNA. Byrna.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country, without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Behind me is the San Diego border wall, what was once regarded as the best example of secure bordering in the United States. Now, this border wall section, it's now facing the same type of border crisis right here as the rest of the country.
We have open gaps here in San Diego, but they're just coming in.
According to statistics from Customs and Border Protection, around 7.2 million illegal immigrants entered the United States under President Joe Biden alone. What is actually causing this crisis?
Joining me now, Josh Phillips, senior investigative reporter at the Epoch Times, or Epoch Times. I always called it Epoch. I don't know why I screwed that up, because I love them. I read them all the time. Anyway, Josh, I always assumed it was just the drug cartels handling things down there. Obviously, I know they are involved, but are there bigger, darker forces at work here?
Yeah, so actually on that note, when I first started investigating the border crisis, you know, I wanted to find out what was behind it, like what's really running this thing. When I first looked into it, I thought I was going to find the drug cartels running the show. And, you know, my interest was, is, you know, our government agents cooperating with drug cartels. That was kind of what I thought was happening. I found when I went down there, I was in Mexico, I was at the U.S.-Mexico border, I went into Panama, to the Darien, right by the Darien Gap, for this feature you just showed the trailer of, and I found that actually what's happening is different. What's happening is that there is a United Nations program running the entire show. If you go down to Darien, what's happening is this. In Panama, they load them up onto buses, they put them all in migrant camps, they load them on buses, and they just ship them to Costa Rica. Costa Rica loads them up on buses. They ship them north. In Nicaragua, it's handled mainly by human smuggling organizations, but same thing in Mexico. Once they reach Mexico, they load them on buses and they ship them to the border. And only at the border, then you have the cartels. And so I'm like, watch this, like, what the heck is going on? I find out there's a program that was created under Barack Obama. Trump got us out of it. Biden brought us back into it. But the program is called the Global Compact for Migration. It's a United Nations program that is facilitating mass illegal immigration into the United States. It's being paid for with our tax dollars.
See, this is staggering to most people. I know a lot about this stuff, and it's staggering to me. You just assume the cartels are facilitating everything, but if I'm hearing you right, the cartels are just the guy we hand them off to at the very end, that this is actually run by the governments of the world?
That's accurate. Actually, in the documentary you show the trailer of, I go to the camps. We went down to the, I mean, just a couple examples. I went down to the Darien Gap, right at the mouth of it in Panama, because what happens is this. This is how it works, right? A lot of them go into Colombia or Ecuador because these countries don't have visa programs. And also, if you're going up to the United States from like Venezuela or something like that, you have to go through the landmass. And so they have to pass through the Darien Gap. That's the only part of the Pan-American Highway that is not connected. And so they have to go through the jungle. They get robbed, they get raped, they get killed. I mean, every person I talked to who came out of it, because I talked to a lot of them, they said there were dead bodies all over the place. They said they, almost every person I talked to said they got robbed. It's horrible. What happens, though, is once they get out of the Darien Gap, they take these piraguas, these canoes run by the Indians, they bring them into these camps, and the camps are United Nations camps. As soon as they get there, they stand in line. The Panamanian Border Patrol, called Centerfront, also their military, they also provide security at it because it's part of their agreement, right? They provide security. United Nations, they have booths all over the place. They check them in. They register them in this whole, you know, program, and then they just ship them north. They load them on buses, and they ship them north. And, I mean, and you get this. It gets even crazier. You know, once they get to, of course, the U.S.-Mexico border, the cartels control the border channels. So only once they want to cross into the United States, then they pay the cartels, and the cartels basically let them through. But I was in San Diego, in San Ysidro, and I gained access to some areas you can't really gain access to normally. I went there with Border Patrol, the Border Patrol Union. And, but I mean, it was shocking. There's huge gaps in the border, and they just walk right through. And, you know, you've been hearing Biden and these guys saying, oh, arrests are up. The Border Patrol is arresting more people. And they're using the arrest numbers to say the whole thing's, you know, they're enforcing the border. They need more money from Congress. What is really happening is they arrest them. They take them to what they call processing facilities. That is run by CBP, Customs Border Protection, and also through Department of Homeland Security. They process them to get them enrolled into the immigration system, into, you know, the waiting line for amnesty. And they give them a free airplane ticket to anywhere in the country. They put them on buses again, and they drop them off within the United States. And then they go to airports and fly anywhere they want. The entire thing is facilitated.
Golly, you know, I would spend the entire time on this thing with you, Josh. I want people to go watch this documentary. Go watch this documentary and find out how evil things are. I can't wait to watch it myself. We're switching gears, though. Election integrity, dueling electors, the Biden administration. Yeah. What's going on?
Right. So in Arizona, you might have seen the case recently. The dueling electors from the 2020 elections were just indicted. They haven't named all of them yet, but they're going to be rolling out more charges. It's very similar to what they did in Georgia, where, you know, they've gone after the dueling electors. And this is how it works, right? Okay, so a couple points on this. If you were to read AP, AP was taking some heat because in AP's article on this, or one of them on this, they say that the charges against the dueling electors in Arizona are part of a quote-unquote campaign. And this campaign is apparently designed to make it so that the things that took place in the 2020 elections don't happen again. In other words, they're making it seem like it's illegal to go through the normal legal means of challenging what might be perceived as election fraud or if there's problems in the election. In reality, it's not illegal to have dueling electors. You know, Democrats did it in Hawaii in 1960. During the 2016 elections, there was an entire Democrat campaign encouraging electoral college electors to become what they call faithless electors. Do you remember 2016? They were trying to overturn the vote for Donald Trump by trying to force the Electoral College to cast alternative votes after they had already been appointed. That's even worse than dueling electors. But the way they're doing this current charge is they're not incriminating the Electoral College, you know, dueling electors process. They're framing it as a conspiracy, suggesting that these people didn't actually believe that the elections were rigged, and because of that, they were just trying to manipulate these systems in order to rig the elections by, again, electing Donald Trump instead of Joe Biden, and that's how they're painting it.
Okay, so what do you think they're doing here, Josh? Are they trying to get out in front of any challenges to the next election, or are they trying to get out in front of potentially losing the next election?
Yeah, well, that's the big question here. You know, this is my concern, is what they're doing is they're making it appear to be illegal or legally dangerous to go through any process of challenging election results. So if you believe the elections were rigged, if you believe that they're, you know, maybe they made universal mail-in ballots, which used to be illegal, but there's a COVID pandemic, and so you have to let everybody do it. You know, that of course naturally is going to raise concerns that maybe there were problems. And so you call for investigations. People are coming forward, giving testimony, which counts as evidence legally. The testimony is, of course, claiming there was wide-scale fraud. And based on that, what do? Well, you launch investigations, you appoint dueling electors so that if the investigations are ongoing at the time that the votes are counted, that there's dueling votes there that can be counted if election fraud is found and things are overturned, which is the precedent established by Democrats in 1960 between Reagan and Nixon, by the way. They had a very close election in Hawaii, in the Hawaii vote count. They appointed dueling electors. Originally, they put it to Nixon, but then once they finished the count, it went to Reagan because they had dueling electors in place for when the investigations finished. And based on the findings, Reagan won, not Nixon. It was the same thing in 2020 with them appointing dueling electors. There were ongoing investigations. They needed to look into it, and so they had dueling electors in place depending on what the findings would be. They're making that process illegal, and so, or at least perceived to be illegal, so people won't dare do it. And I question now, if the normal checks and balances of investigating fraud, prosecuting, you know, taking lawsuits and so on, if all of that is now perceived as a crime, like, what do you do? What do you do if there's election fraud? Are you going to risk going to prison for calling it out? What do you do? I think it's terrible that they've damaged this check and balance system on the elections through this.
No, it certainly is. Josh, before I let you go, where can people watch this documentary? I want people to watch it.
Yeah, so the documentary on the border crisis, it's called the Weapons of Mass Migration, Weapons of Mass Migration. You can see it on May 9th on epictv.com, epochtv.com. We also have a website for it, massmigrationfilm.com.
How about that? Go watch it, everybody. Josh, thank you, brother. Outstanding work. Outstanding. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. You ready for that? Next.
Hey there. I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And to lighten the mood, I just want to give a little salute, a little shout out to the frat boys who decided to stand underneath Old Glory, the American flag, on that college campus when the dirty commies were trying to trash it. They stood underneath it and they held it up, and they did something even more important and impressive than that. They made merciless fun of the feminists who came up and started shouting at them.
Bad ass, it's f*** you! With f*** you! It's f***.
Hey, bro, lose some weight.
That's so mean. Lose some weight. Whatever. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.